Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 33, Tapering Beta Blockers, with Dr. Sanjay Gupta from the UK. And today, it's November 7th, 2023. In this special episode, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, a consultant cardiologist at York Teaching Hospital in York, United Kingdom. He also represents general medicine on the patient safety group and is a HYMS tutor and has been awarded 2 clinical excellence awards. Dr. Gupta was so kind to take the time to answer my questions and shares his views on his profession and the healthcare system. On behalf of the benzodiazepine harms community, I invited Dr. Gupta. As the ASHA manual is widely recognized, appreciated, and embraced, we can't deny it's over 20 years old and there are more developments and views within the community. In the ASHA manual, the short-acting beta blocker propranolol is mentioned as a possible tool for those who suffer heart palpitations in benzodiazepine withdrawal. Professor Ashton mentions in her renowned manual that dependency does occur when taking a beta blocker daily and requires a taper. Information on how to taper, adverse effects, and possible dangers aren't well researched. Personally, I had a really difficult time coming off of propranolol and had severe withdrawal symptoms. Dr. Christy Huff, also a cardiologist and has a lived experience on the matter, was so kind to join me in episode 36, where we discussed the topic. It is one of the most listened to episodes of Benzo Tired. I have a close friend within the benzo harm community who is going through a severe propranolol withdrawal. The friend and I have done research on cases having difficulties coming off of beta blockers and have found some disturbing reports. As of present, I cannot share too much, but I can share that we want to raise awareness on the possible negative outcomes of beta blockers. Please do not stop your beta blocker abruptly and consult a medical professional if you have any questions about your prescription. Find Dr. Gupta at yourcardiology.co.uk. Dr. Gupta, thank you so much for making the time for Benzo Tired.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for that video that you made during the pandemic about tapering beta blockers. It was one of the few things that I was able to find in my research on the topics. So, Dr. Gupta, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
So I'm a cardiologist. I'm a consultant cardiologist. I've been a cardiologist for 14 years now. I work in a place called York. Over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, I've become more and more interested in patient empowerment. And that's why I started my YouTube channel called Your Cardiology, where I try and talk about stuff which may at first look complex, but hopefully try and simplify it in a way that people can understand it. And, you know, unfortunately, now there's a lot of anxiety out there because medical access is not so easy. It's very expensive. People are on the internet. There's all sorts of stuff on the internet that can cause unnecessary anxiety. So I thought there was a need for, someone who's got a background in this to put information out. So that's how I got started.
Thank you very much for that. So some of the questions that I have is, why are beta blockers generally prescribed and where would you prescribe them for?
So beta blockers are one of the most commonly prescribed medications in cardiology. And one of the reasons why they're used is because they blunt the effects of adrenaline. And by doing so, they have lots of beneficial effects for the heart. So in most conditions to do with the heart, you get something called adrenaline overdrive. You get sympathetic overdrive. Those include heart rhythm disorders. So when the heart goes excessively fast, if you can stop the effects of adrenaline on the heart, you can slow it down. So beta blockers will slow the heart down. Also, because they slow the heart down, they can lower the blood pressure. Because they can slow the heart down, they can allow the heart more time to heal. Because they slow the heart down, they reduce the demands placed upon the heart. So the common reasons why we use them, Number one is for symptoms of palpitations, so people who complain of palpitations. Now, that can be simply just due to anxiety, and you can use a beta blocker for that, or you can use it because the patient has a heart rhythm disorder, the heart goes excessively fast, and beta blockers can slow that down and therefore make it more bearable for the patient. Number two, angina. Angina is a condition where there are narrowings in our heart arteries, so when our heart is working harder, it's asking for more blood. But because of those narrowings, the blood doesn't get through quick enough and the patient complains of chest discomfort, chest heaviness. And in the worst case scenario, that can even lead to a heart attack. So what beta blockers are doing is they're reducing the demand. They're slowing the heart down. So because the heart isn't going as fast, it's not asking for more blood, which means that the blood can get through. Number three, blood pressure. So beta blockers lower adrenaline. Adrenaline raises our blood pressure. So beta blockers lower the blood pressure. Number four, heart failure. So that is where the heart is weak. And because it is weak, it feels like it has to go faster to try and get the blood round because you're not getting as much blood out with each heartbeat. So you have to increase the number of heartbeats. But that actually, in the long term, causes the heart to weaken even more. So beta blockers have found a really important role in the management of heart failure. They are given for both symptomatic benefit, and in some cases, they also have a life-prolonging effect. So in patients with heart failure, they actually prolong life. In patients with angina, palpitations, they are given for symptomatic benefit.
And when would you say that someone would have to taper? How long would they have needed to use it?
I think the first thing you've got to work out is it being given because of an underlying dangerous condition? Or is it just being given because of a inconvenient condition? So, for example, if someone were very anxious, they got very nervous, you could give them a beta blocker, it would calm them down. If you took them off the beta blocker, they may find that they get more anxious again, but you don't expect them to come to any harm as a result. On the other hand, if you were giving the patient the beta blocker because they have severe angina, for example, so here the heart is now not asking for more blood, so everything's ticking along nicely, suddenly you stop the beta blocker, suddenly the heart may not cope with this increased demand, and there is a risk that the patient may get more angina, more chest pain. If that happens, that could even lead to a heart attack. So in situations where the beta blocker has been given for heart failure, severe bad angina, and maybe some heart rhythm disturbances, particularly dangerous heart rhythm disturbances, it's important not to stop the beta blocker. Ideally, certainly not stop it at all unless the doctor says it's okay. But if you are going to do it, it's always a good idea to do things gradually to allow the body to adapt.
Right, right. So in cases where there isn't a heart condition, but someone took it for anxiety, or in this case where most listeners were put on them because of their benzodiazepine withdrawal, how would you say to taper in your experience?
I would generally always recommend tapering slowly because I think that the body, neither the body nor the mind likes sudden change. So I would always recommend that whenever you're doing anything like that, you want to do it gradually. It allows you to see what the effects of lowering the medication are. And to my mind, unless we felt that the beta blocker was actually doing you active harm by being in your body, why not taper it slowly?
Right,
So if I found that, okay, you come to me because your heart rate has now fallen to 10 beats per minute and you're blacking out. Sure, in that situation, I would say, well, this is actually causing you harm. Let's stop the beta blockers, full stop. But if you came to me because, you know, you were getting a bit more side effects from the beta blocker, you were more tired, it was making you feel cold, it was giving you bad nightmare, I'd say, okay, go slightly lower because we can see whether on a lower dose your side effects get less, right, but also whether the beneficial effects of the beta blocker are still maintained at a lower dose. if they are, great. Why take a higher dose if you can get away with a lower dose?
Right, right, exactly.
On the other hand, they're not, it allows you a little bit, it allows you to, it gives you time to calibrate and to understand what this medication is actually doing. Is it doing you harm? Is it doing you benefit?
Right, right. And in terms of the withdrawal of the beta blockers, what, in your experience, what are the worst kind of symptoms that you've seen in patients trying to come off of the beta blockers?
So usually palpitation and awareness that your heart is beating much harder, much faster. That is by far, because one of the most dramatic things that the beta blocker does is it slows your heart down. So when you come off the beta blocker, most people say, oh, my heart's going a bit faster and I don't like it. And that can be very anxiety provoking. It can be very unsettling for the patient. So that's the first thing. Other things that patients may complain of if they come off beta blockers too quickly, they may say, I feel more anxious. You know, I've just got all this more adrenaline in my body and I don't like it. They could say things like, I've got more chest pain. If it was given to control chest pain, obviously, then coming off the beta blocker would cause more chest pain. They may turn around and say, particularly in patients with heart failure, you know, the heart is weak. The beta blocker is stopping the heart being put under excessive demand. You stop the beta blocker, suddenly the heart may not cope. And that can be very dangerous. And the patient may come in with lots of fluid in their lungs, almost drowning.
Wow.
It's uncommon. It's uncommon. But these are hypothetical possibilities. You know, these are things that people can come in. In my case, when I've come across patients, it's largely that they feel that their heart has gone fast and that they don't like it.
Right, right. So in terms of the taper, if someone would be on propranolol, which is a very, you know, widely prescribed beta blocker, in your experience, would people overall would be able to taper the propranolol, or would you recommend them to go to a beta blocker that is longer acting?
No, I would just taper the propranolol very slowly. So I would say, if you're taking it, let's say if you're taking a small dose 4 times a day, I'd say, well, just start off by taking half in the half as your first dose, and then the rest of it as normal. And then after a couple of days, you can go to half, half, and the rest of it normal. After another couple of days, you could go half, 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 half.
Right.
And
right.
Then you could say, okay, I'll take 2 off. And you do it over 2 or 3 weeks. And it just allows you to get to that point where you say, okay, at this dose, I actually felt well. And now when I've gone down to this dose, I feel unwell. And so it's not a huge jump for the patient then just to take that extra bit.
Right, right. And have you ever seen cases where people were on short acting beta blockers and really struggled, you know, dosaging while tapering over the day? And would you ever recommend them, or never, you would never recommend them to go to a longer acting beta blocker?
I haven't ever had to do it for any of my patients.
Okay. Have you had cases where the 2 or 3 weeks were just too rapid for people to taper?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And there are some times when, particularly there are conditions like dysautonomia, you know, where patients just cannot do without the beta blocker. But when they're on the beta blocker, they have side effects, they don't like it, etc. So in those patients, rather than switch them to another beta blocker, I'd switch them to another type of medication that lowers the heart down, but doesn't necessarily do all the other stuff that beta blockers do. So there are other medications like Procorlan, calcium blockers, that kind of thing, where you can still control the heart rate without subjecting them to the rest of the effects of the beta blockers.
Oh, right. I never thought of that. And in your opinion or experience, what are the most severe cases that you've seen patients trying to come off their beta blocker? Can it be deadly?
Well, we've certainly had patients where the medications have stopped suddenly and they've ended up in the hospital with heart failure or mm-hmm. with bad angina. So, you know, they've for example, they've gone and they've one day just decided that they'll go away on holiday without any medications, and they often end up then getting admitted to the hospital at the destination because they've got chest pains, etc. So yes, I think there is something to be said for not stopping anything suddenly. But the majority of cases, you know, they don't like it for a few days and then they just get better. You know, it's, I don't see the deadly consequences on a regular basis. I have seen patients come in, but they're generally uncommon. And one of the reasons is that doctors don't these days just stop the medications. You know, they'll say, okay,
right,
they'll refer them to us and we would do it.
Okay. And in your opinion, are there any lifestyle and or dietary changes that may mitigate some of the withdrawal symptoms caused by beta blockers?
I mean, I think there always lifestyle just makes you better no matter what you have, you know. So if you have heart failure, we know that lifestyle, regular exercise, good sleep patterns make your heart failure status better. If you have anxiety, we know all these things make that better, you know, meditation, good sleep, etc. So lifestyle is always a good thing and they'll make the underlying condition a bit better, which means that you are less reliant on the medications then. So that's something we would recommend to everyone. But I don't think it's a case of that you should do specifically something for the sake of coming off the beta blocker. You should do it for the sake of the condition that you were given the beta blocker for, which will get better, which means that you're less reliant than on the beta blocker or you don't need as high a dose.
Right. And in your experience or opinion, are there medications that one should not take alongside beta blockers?
I mean, you see, the thing is with beta blockers, they work by slowing the heart down. So if you combine them with other medications that slow the heart down, then there is obviously a risk that you could slow the heart down excessively. Mm-hmm. Similarly, they lower the blood pressure. So you have to be careful about giving more medications that lower the blood pressure as well, because that could push the blood pressure too low. Patients may collapse, etc. Having said that, I mean, the majority of patients, you know, tolerate beta blockers and other medications. You just have to do it carefully. And where you see something, where you combine two medications like a beta blocker and something else, and you find that the heart rate falls profoundly, I suspect that's unmasked an underlying problem rather than caused it.
Right. So a lot of people in the benzodiazepine harmed community that listen to this podcast, oftentimes they check out the Ashton Manual. I'm not really sure if you're familiar with it. It is a British, or she's no longer with us, but she did some studies about benzodiazepines. It's kind of like 20 years old now or longer. Anyways, one of her recommendations is because some people that go through benzodiazepine withdrawal get severe heart palpitations, and one can choose to take propranolol to kind of counter that hyperaccessibility from the central nervous system and all that. My first question about this is, would you support that? Would you also think like, okay, if there is, yes, you're nodding. Okay.
I think so, because I think benzodiazepines, you know, have the harm caused by long-term benzos is so much greater, and beta blockers, they don't cause long-term harm in general. You know, you take them, when you stop taking them, their effects wear off. You know, you don't become dependent like you do with benzos.
Right. And her recommendation at the time was propranolol. I think the brand name is Inderol. I'm not really sure. And she described in her case studies that some people chose to just take them, you know, as needed. And some people decided to take them on a daily basis. Now, if you're battling that, you know, heart that is so excited all the time and all this adrenaline, would you then, if someone would be taking them daily for an indefinite amount of time, would you then also recommend propranolol? Or do you think that there are other beta blockers out there that may pose less problems or just be more beneficial?
I mean, I think most beta blockers work in a similar manner. And a lot of the studies were done with propranolol for anxiety. So propranolol is commonly used as an anti-anxiolytic, whereas the other beta blockers have sort of gained repute with as anti-anginals, etc. The difference is with the longer acting beta blockers, you get the effect of the beta blocker for a longer period of time, and therefore compliance is much easier. So you just take one tablet and it covers you for the whole of the day, whereas propranolol you have to take 3-4 times a day. So that can be problematic for patients, you know, because they, in some ways, the question really is what helps the healing process. And I suppose it would be quite nice not to have any symptoms for a while, just because you're covered all the time, rather than to have the symptoms, then take a tablet, then for the symptoms to come back, then take another tablet, etc. So if someone is planning to be on the medications for a while, and I don't see a problem with that, the beta blocker, then I would use a longer acting agent.
Okay, that's good to know. That's very good to know. Now, what are some of the common adverse or side effects from beta blockers?
I mean, I think if you, you know, they blunt the effects of adrenaline. So too much adrenaline is a bad thing. But too little adrenaline is also a bad thing, because it makes you almost feel like a zombie. You need some adrenaline to just give you some get up and go. And unfortunately, what beta blockers do, and the biggest problem that most people say is, oh, I felt like a zombie. I just didn't have the energy, didn't have the get up and go. I was tired all the time. But that's what happens, you know, when you're just suppressing adrenaline completely, that's what happens. So I wouldn't worry about beta blockers causing side effects which the patient doesn't feel. But if the patient feels something, if they impact on their quality of life badly, then I think that those are the side effects that matter, because why should you give someone something which actually makes their quality of life worse? So the side effects, main ones, are tiredness. They will say stuff like they feel cold. So beta blockers can make people feel cold. Some people talk about stuff like nightmares. In men, they can sometimes be associated with erectile dysfunction.
I went through a beta blocker withdrawal myself, so I'm not currently on the beta blocker, but I tapered a dose of 30 milligrams of propranolol over the course of 3 weeks, and I had to hold because my blood pressure went so low that I just dropped to the floor. I had night sweats, cold hands, heart palpitations, and I was kind of bracing for impact. But, you know, for me, I guess it's different than, you know, someone who is not on benzodiazepines, because I'm on benzodiazepines in this taper. So maybe it just got exacerbated because, you know, I'm dealing with that as well. But I was kind of scared. It was pretty intense, the withdrawal symptoms. And I'm getting some feedback from the community that they sometimes struggle too. But one of your arguments, and I tend to agree, is because we were dealing with the short acting one, the propranolol. So if you are intending to take it for a longer period of time, because unfortunately for most of us that are listening to this, our benzodiazepine withdrawal will take a long time, then the long acting would be preferred. So is there any beta blocker that you would recommend of all the beta blockers that are long acting?
I mean, the most commonly used long-acting beta blocker at the moment is bisoprolol, partly because it has evidence in lots of different conditions. So we've gained a lot of experience. You know, when you're using a beta blocker, we would generally say it goes between two. Short-acting beta blockers are beta blockers like propranolol and metoprolol. Long-acting beta blockers are atenolol and bisoprolol. Those are the main beta blockers that we use. There are lots of other beta blockers, but they don't get used much. So if someone said, oh, which one would you go to from a short-acting one, bisoprolol would be the one.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, kind of off topic, but I saw your website and I saw your video about how you wanted to do things differently in healthcare, and I was very much impressed. Could you share with the audience what moved you to choose this path?
Yeah, I think you see what happened is you sort of strive to become a doctor, you go out there and you think, okay, well, when I become a doctor, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm going to make a difference. And after a while, I started realizing that actually medicine has become very protocolized. Someone tells us, do this, and we do it. And therefore, there's no real joy in that because we're just following instructions, you know. And the problem is when we do those things that we're told to do, we still don't make people better.
Right.
And that realization comes to you after a while because you start realizing that actually I'm seeing the same guys. Just because I sent him home doesn't mean I sorted his problems out. 6 months, 3 months later, he's back in. I've started realizing that actually we were patching people up. We've become a sickness service rather than a health service. Then the question came about, well, what do you do if the medications are the medications and, well, I don't have access to other medications. These are the medications I use. Well, if they're not really sorting the patient out, then what is my role? What do I bring into the equation? Anyone can do what I'm doing. Anyone can follow a bunch of instructions, give people a statin and give people an aspirin. What's my contribution to this? And then I've started realizing that actually maybe there is a contribution. Well, we can be empathic. We can listen to patients. We can be kind to them. We can educate them. We can engage them. And then we can empower them. You know, those are really important things. And maybe that counts for more than just giving someone a tablet and pushing them outside because you're running short of time. Being able to sit down and develop that human-to-human interaction, you know, where you just simply say, look, you know, I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to listen to your story and then see if I can help you in some way get out of where you are. I think that can be a therapy in itself.
You would be a bliss for all the people listening to this. Yes.
So that's what I chose to do. You know, I chose to use my skills to try and deliver information in an empathic manner to allow patients to take charge of their own lives. And also the important thing is to make people aware that actually, you know, let's try and stop being broken in the first place rather than breaking and waiting for people to patch us up, because then you never get it back. You know, once you're broken, you're just broken, keep breaking. Whereas if you can actually educate people at the outset and say, look, you know, I can give you tablets. I can give you tablets to lower your blood pressure, but am I actually doing anything for you? Am I not just making your symptoms? Chronic conditions are like the body's scream for help, the body's cry for help. So high blood pressure is often not a condition, it's a symptom. The body is saying, I'm unhappy. I'm unhappy because I'm under stress. I'm unhappy because you're putting the wrong things inside me. I'm unhappy because you've put on too much weight and I'm having to work so much harder to get the blood round. And so if you go to a doctor now, they'll just say, oh, we'll take this tablet. And you think, okay, well, now my blood pressure isn't elevated. I'm okay. But the things that were probably causing your blood pressure to be elevated are still going on. So the next thing that'll happen is you'll develop diabetes. And then you go to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, here's, take some more tablets for your diabetes. But they haven't tackled the underlying problem. So all we're doing is silencing a scream every time. And that is to the detriment of the patient. What we should be doing is saying, why is your body screaming? What's going on here? And maybe spending that hour with the patient talking about that will yield greater dividends than saying, okay, just take one tablet and then take another tablet. And the big problem is the burden of over-medication, you know, because they all have side effects. And even if they don't, just the idea of having to take 10 tablets a day is horrendous. That in itself is horrendous. So I don't think the medical world is actually interested in your health anymore. I think it's interested in your sickness. And in some ways, a lot of what they do is they propagate sickness, you know, by masking symptoms and not tackling the underlying problem. So I think there's a better way out there, and empowering patients to realize that is probably sort of one contribution I could make in my time as in medicine. Then I think that would be good. So that's what I've chosen to do.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute joy to talk to you. Thank you so much for making the time. And I hope that we speak again soon.
Well, it's wonderful that I've had this opportunity. So I appreciate the invitation very much, and I think you're also doing exactly what I do. Community and connection, that's what you're doing, and that's what I would love to do more of as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.